Hi, you're on day 6 of the Smartest Telesummit 2007. We're back from our break and gearing up to hear more about websites and how best they may serve us. From me, Ariane Goodwin, your host and organizer for Smartest 2007. You know, yesterday I was so grateful for Steve because he gave us something invaluable. My approach is part nuts and bolts, as Steve gave you, but there's some places where he and I differ. And I also want to give you some of the underpinnings of why I think websites work the way they do. My understanding about what's going on in the larger picture, culturally and developmentally. Now, why would I go there? It seems like it might be a little esoteric. But in my heart, I believe that when we add this perspective of the larger container we're working in, that it really impacts how we individually, each one of us, go about putting together the nuts and bolts. But before I go any further, just because this vacuum makes me a little nervous, I'm going to unmute the phone and just check in and make sure all my artists are there. Hold on. Hello, are you there?
Hello.
All right, yay. Okay, I'm going back on mute. So this is about the mistakes that we make on our website. And one of the participants brought up a really interesting question. She wanted to know why focus on mistakes as a topic instead of something more, I'm assuming more positive or more forward-looking. Well, there's something interesting about mistakes in our human brains. I don't know how many of you know this, but biologically, they've done research and discovered that human brains are actually hardwired for mistakes, that we naturally think about 9 what we would call negative thoughts to 1 positive one. And I think we've confused ourselves with the words negative and positive so that we don't know what's happening underneath. It's pretty simple. It's that we are creatures initially of survival, what Molly talked about today about Maslow's hierarchy. We initially need to survive before we can move on. So the brain is wired to check out what's going on in our environment or within ourselves that might not be contributing to our survival. If all we're thinking about is sort of, you know, pleasant, happy, positive, what we, you know, in the public domain, what we consider positive thoughts, if we actually could be putting some part of us asleep that needs to be paying attention to something that might not be working well, that if we pay attention to it, then it works better. So that's why I think mistakes are in and of themselves something to be really thinking about, as Molly talked about them, as a really positive force. The mistakes are not negative. You know, dolphins, when they're moving through the underworld, they send out these sonar radar that fly out from their bodies, and if it bounces back at them, it tells them that that radar has just hit an obstacle, and it tells them not to go there. That's how I think of mistakes for human beings. It's like our sonar. It's guiding us in the world. When we make a mistake, it's only telling us something very simple. Oops, that didn't work. And then we don't have to do that again. So a mistake, in my mind, is extremely positive. So let me talk a bit about why I think websites are so valuable right now. It's not just that they are becoming the gold standard for presentation in our world. They're valuable because I think that they speak to a larger truth. They reach out and connect us to each other in ways we never had the opportunity to before. It makes this interconnective tissue of us as part of this larger body of human growth, human evolution, human dynamic, real in a very concrete way. So that's, for me, the sort of deliciousness underneath the very practical bits of how you go about doing this is that sort of deeper place of why this is so important and why it's good to think about it in this larger context that holds all of us as human beings in this wonderful interconnected web. So the first mistake I want to talk about is this thinking that just getting your site up is all it takes. And I know that this comes because it feels so daunting to some, the whole idea of a website, especially if the if we're older in the older bracket and the whole new world of technology is not something we've grown up with, we're having to grow into. It feels more challenging than the younger ones who have grown up with us and it's part of their familiar landscape. Just getting your site up, period, is not going to do the trick. Hundreds, probably thousands of sites can fold after a few months. Most likely they failed because they don't understand the nature of the beast. We're very young in terms of websites, so we keep going back to what's familiar to us. And right now we're still at this very tender passageway where we're coming out of an era. I sort of think of it as, you know, coming from the agricultural revolution into the industrial revolution, into the information revolution. And the information revolution, it really kind of started with printing, where the printing mechanism allowed suddenly a distribution and proliferation of material human beings had never known before. Now the web and the internet is creating that in a new way. But it is a new way, and we're coming off the old world, which is brochures, paper products, magazines, books, portfolios, and because that's our familiar context, we make the mistake of thinking that we just have to take that material and plop it up onto a website. I know an artist who gets 4,000 international visitors a day clicking on his section in a, what I call a boutique website, which is what artspan.com and Art Exchange do. But he doesn't get a single sale. And I asked him, because he was very proud of these 4,000 visitors. He could go look at his stats and say, oh, 4,000 people looked at my website today. But when I asked him what his sales were, and he said nothing, I said, so what good are these 4,000 visitors doing to you? It might as well be zero. If even thousands of people come to your site and think, cool, but they don't stay to look around and they don't do the one thing you want them to do you even know what this is? Stay tuned. We'll get to that later. Then you've lost the point of having a site at all. So I'm going to give you a brief chronological history of my websites just because I'm not an artist, but it's an example to understand the nature of websites. In terms of how young they are, let's put this in terms of human beings on Earth. This planet is 5 billion years old, give or take a few days. About 2 million years ago, our closest ancestors had the ability to control fire. 790,000 years ago, modern humans, Homo sapiens, are believed to have originated somewhere around that time, which in terms of the whole Earth time is about 4 seconds of our Earth time. Cro-Magnon cave paintings, probably with magical or religious significance, or as I like to think of it as the human creature started to step into the magic of creativity, did not appear until 32,000. That's 6.06 seconds in terms of the entire Earth history. So I repeat, the Internet and the World Wide Web are very young. Please keep that in mind. And like children, they have to start out crawling before they stand up and walk. And mine was no exception. It began crawling. When the first website I ever put up, I can't even remember now, maybe 5 years ago, it was only a gateway to my publisher when they published my book, Writing the Artist Statement, Revealing the True Spirit of Your Work. I thought, okay, I'll create a gateway to my publisher so if people are looking on the internet, they can go to artist-statement.com, click on buy the book, and pop, you landed on a page in my publisher's website. Oh, I thought it was so cool. I didn't know a whole lot, but I was still tickled pink of my own ignorance. People could promote my book. I could promote my book, and people could know more about me. Oh, it was so great. But it took 7 months for someone to point out to me that I was probably losing about 700% profit on each book by not selling directly from my website. By the way, just a quick footnote, one of the advantages of publishing on demand, you might have heard me refer to this in one of the other sessions, is that you have control over the physical document of your book, and if you want to sell it from your seller, you can do that. The traditional publishing houses, you don't get that opportunity. So I thought, oh my gosh, okay, I've never been very enthusiastic. I had no clue about selling anything, much less myself. But the idea of 700% profit kind of tickled me a little bit. So I decided to move forward, except I'd wake up and sweat some nights because I didn't know what to do or what to do next. I didn't have a clue where to start. So I started doing research, and it took me months to do the research. And then I launched the next website where you could go on and buy my book on my website. And I thought, once again, wow, done. We're done. Here we go. This is in. I've reached the pinnacle of websites. And then the strange thing started happening. From all different parts of the world, artists started contacting me through my website. And they started asking me for career help. And I realized as they asked me these questions that I really did know the answers and I really could help them and that I actually had a different core expertise and it wasn't being a writer. Talk about a big surprise. This was news to me. It was utterly, totally nothing I had ever thought about, had ever dreamed of. And that is what I want to encourage you to think about. There is a power in websites because they open us up to new dimensions that we might not have ever considered before. So once again, my website changed and I was faced with another giant learning curve. This time, I had to remake my website for a different identity. Again, this took me forever. I'm a slow learner. I think it took me 18 months. It became a joke in our house when I would leave the kitchen, the dining room table, kitchen table, and I would say, okay, everybody, I'm going up to finish the website tonight. And everybody would just kind of roll their eyes and look at each other. It took me 18 months. And in fact, that experience is now going to be turned into an ebook for artists on how to develop websites so that you don't have to spend 18 months and do all the mistakes that I did. Mistake number two. And this is the next one. This is what where I really learned about research. You think that designing your site before deciding what you want it to do. Oops, excuse me, did I hear her right? Doesn't she know what I want to do? I'm an artist. This is true. But the truth of a website is, because it isn't a brochure, it isn't a portfolio, it isn't a catalog, it's a website. It means when a visitor lands on that first page, you need to tell them what to do next because they're actually looking for an excuse to either stay or jump off. You have 3 to 9 seconds to keep a new visitor on your site. If you have not listened to what it is you want your website to do or accomplish before you design it, you will not have laid out the right, I call it the breadcrumbs to the gingerbread house. So there are 12 reasons to have a website. Now, you don't have to take notes here because the handout I gave you has all of these 12 reasons right in them. So just sort of drop in and listen at this point. More than one of these could work for you, and these are fairly global reasons, but they're important to hone in then on what you are going to be doing with your website and how to design it from that. Do you want to upgrade your professional presence? Websites take the place of brochures. They can replace entire portfolios, which, by the way, doesn't mean you don't have to have a hard copy portfolio because there are those galleries and those venues who still request it. It makes your material instantly accessible and easily updated for galleries and collectors and much less expensive in the long run than trying to update an entire portfolio. The second reason, name recognition. With an online gallery, your website reaches its audience 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. People get to know you at their leisure, increases the chances of buying. A little caveat on name recognition. A lot of artists ask me about this. It's really important to understand that unless you're in a very niche craft market. And what you're doing is the creativity of artwork, especially in the fine art area. Your name is your brand. You don't want to sidetrack people by trying to create a different name than you, because eventually what you want to be known for is your work. Number three, ease of access and follow-up. Research shows that it takes up to 12 contacts before people commit to a purchase. Now, if all of us are really honest, we'll find out that that's true about ourselves. How many times did you go back to look at that coat before you actually bought it? How many times did you have to research and think about the car before you put your money down? Everybody is just like us. It takes time to get familiar, to feel comfortable, to reach in, because even though money is an exchange of value, it also begins a relationship. Money exchange begins a relationship, and nobody wants to trust a stranger. So we come back at least 12 times. With a website, collectors and galleries and prospective buyers can return again and again to view a work that excites them or to learn more about you. And they don't need you there to introduce them over and over again, to interact, so it gives them more ease. Number four, ease of referral. It's easier and less intimidating to check out a website than to set up a time to meet you and see your work. It increases people's comfort zone, which is always a plus. Number five, you can create a historical perspective for your work. Websites offer you a chance to create depth and longevity by cataloging and organizing an entire body of work as you want to show it. Number six, you build a database of warm collectors and buyers. This goes back to that list that everybody keeps telling you about. Research shows that someone who buys once is most likely to buy again and again. They say that 80% of our sales come from 20% of our contacts. And from that 20% come another 80% of the sales. With a website, you can keep in touch with past buyers, setting up your autoresponders and a list to let them know about recent works, shows, articles, why to come back. Number seven. You control the website and the visitors and where you want them to go. Again, you have 3 to 9 seconds to keep them there. When it's done right, your visitors want to stay and explore. There are simple design tricks and tools that you can take charge of to tell people where to go next, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on. Eight, increase your income. A website can become an online business that sells your art, craft, or expertise, or a combination of these. As an added bonus, it is virtual space. Overhead is far more reasonable than solid real estate. In fact, if you do it right, there is no better return on the stretched dollar than a thoughtful, strategically designed website. Promote your work for pennies or less. A website is the cheapest and most valuable promotional tool for new work, press releases, article, archive, collections, and anything else you can think of that relates to that niche of your site. And number 10, this dovetails with Jones talking about expertise and other people talking about creating a list. I call it create a steady cash flow with reap while you sleep. Have you developed a new technique? Do you know about valuable resources? Have you learned things about different aspects of art others would want to know? Are you willing to teach a class? With the right website, you can develop any expertise into a continuous stream of passive income that flows from your website into your checking account while you sleep. People in other professions do it all the time. Now, this brought up a question that one of you sent me that I thought was a really excellent one. I'm going to pop it in right here. So somebody said, you know, I'm an expert. You know, I paint. That's what I do. I paint all the time. I'm an expert on painting. You know, how does that translate when other artists aren't necessarily in my market? Well, first, I want to just reassure you that sometimes other artists can be your market. Do not discount each other as art patrons. And if you really are sincere, remember what Molly said today about walking the talk and talking the walk. If you really truly believe in art and believe it should be part of everybody's everyday life, then every once in a while, you too need to pull out your wallet and put down some hard cash on pieces of art that you love. It's a way of supporting not just your fellow artists, but of actually supporting yourself in a deeper way, because it's sort of like the energy flow opens up and says, oh, I recognize this, and flows right back to you. So that's the first part of this question. But the second part about the expertise, well, you're right. If all you know, if all you think you know, if all you're telling yourself you know is about painting, then that may not translate. Then again, it may. Any number of human beings out there are dying to know more about painting, not because they want to become an entrepreneurial artist, but because they just want to do it for the sheer joy of it, for the sheer pleasure of creating. So you can think of it as expanding that creativity juice and joy to other people in the world, not as another fellow competitive artist. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is think of yourself as an expert in a broader range. You can be playful here. You do not have to worry that playfulness will make you look amateurish or unprofessional. Believe it or not, collectors, gallery owners, they too are human beings. They too can have a sense of humor. They too find seriousness, you know, weightful and bearing down on them from time to time. You can lighten up this whole scene without losing your professional edge. Yes, there's a fine line between being tacky and being fun and playful, but I trust that from what I've seen, everybody who's given me feedback, you're a bunch of smart cookies, and I just think you're not going to fall into that. And if you think you are, get feedback from other people before you do something you think could be foolish and find out what's really going on, because sometimes our own inner space gives us doubts and makes us feel that what we're doing is not a good thing, but it doesn't match up with actually what we're doing in the world and how other people receive it. So always get feedback from a handful of people you trust to be real with you. But you might have something, you know, really fun to offer people. You know, you might have the world's, you know, you might find yourself in the studio and what you do is you whip up this batch of, you know, Aunt Ellie's great chocolate chip cookies. I mean, I don't do sugar with this because it doesn't work for me, but who knows, whatever. And so you offer that, you know, recipe on your website, and you offer it in exchange for getting an email address from somebody. Or you say, you know, did you ever wonder, you know, what it was like to paint, you know, for 8 hours a day? You know, I have this little essay I've written. You know, you think about different creative ways that you can create a fun way that give something to people on their website, on your website, that they will want to exchange their email address for. It does not have to be serious, or it could be serious. Say, for example, you're a landscape artist. You could offer, you know, and you could go and look up on the web and find out information about different landscapes to go visit in the United States. For people to travel, landscapes you should never miss when you're traveling. And you can offer that up in exchange for an email address and contact name. There are so many different ways. Joan mentioned the friend of hers who did garden art. And so she's going to talk about garden, certain things about gardens. Lots of people garden who don't even think about art. It's also another way to get yourself on search engines as a cross-reference, you know. So you do gardening art, and then you should be on all the reference material that has to do with gardening. So there's lots of ways to think about your expertise. A website, unlike any other marketing method, introduces you to the global village. You expand your visibility by becoming a contributing member of a national, international, and worldwide online community. And this is why blogging is so much a part of the cultural landscape now. It is creating that interconnected tissue I spoke of even more. And the last is it grows your professional credibility a la the 2100s. The new possibilities for getting recognition keep expanding, and as artists, we have to expand with these. Okay, mistake number three. This is a tough one. As artists, we naturally focus on visuals, but we cannot do this to the exclusion of equally important elements, words. Now, I'm sure that you could think I'm biased, and you'd probably be right. My passion is words. I've said it in my talk about artist statements. They create another layer of connection, and they are as natural to us humans as breathing. But there's another logic behind words. Think about going up to Google and typing in a picture, typing in an image. Can't do it. Not possible. What do you have to type in? Oh, dear. You have to type in words. So you have to think about the words that are connected to what you do and put them on your website. Even when people are looking for something like a watch, yes, they want to see that picture of the watch there because it identifies it for them. But the human brain cannot translate pictures into words. They need the words directly. And so the next thing you do after the watch is you look for to see if the name's the right name. Oh, yeah, there's the name of the watch. Yeah, I've got the right watch. And then you look at the description, words, and more words. So words are your most, they're your friend. They're your ally. They're not your enemy. That said, you do have to pay attention to things like, is it interesting copy? Is it too long? Are the words spaced well enough on the computer screen for the eye to grab onto? The biggest mistake I see with a lot of people on many, many websites, not just artists, is they write a paragraph and cram everything together. Separate things out with bullets. You know, create partial phrases. Create excitement. Create, you know how blogs will often start with a kind of headline? And then the headline will go dot, 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 but the headline's so engaging, you click on it so you can get to the rest of the article. You can do that on different pages of your website to keep people moving through the site to where you want them to go next. Mistake number four. And this is a hard one, too, because artists, we're often rule breakers, and we're egocentric, which I think of as a positive force myself. I don't ever think of egocentric. I think of selfish as a negative, but egocentric simply means that I'm centering my awareness around who I am and what I'm doing, not to the exclusion of others, but so that I can better serve others. But we're prone to this really big mistake of failed websites. We forget that the visitors who surf the websites are also egocentric. Because when someone lands on your site, they want something for themselves. So you really want to keep in mind, and it's a rule you don't want to break, don't get in their way and don't forget to give it to them. In your handout, I've included 11 ways you can annoy your visitors. So again, you don't need to take notes, and I'm going to fly through these just so you understand the sort of sense, get a smell for how this works. Bells and whistles, flash, splash pages that are too long to load or have blinking things that distract the eye. You don't want to do that. Animations distract and they break connection. Your visitor leaves. Mystery buttons. There's a something there, you don't know what it is. You don't know why you should click on it. Enter here pages. I have such a beef with these. It takes too long to get to the main course, and your visitor leaves. You give them the home page first, no enter here. Do not say, welcome to my website, please. You're going to put me to sleep immediately. Negligent planning. There's no focal point on a page. It takes too long to figure out why I'm there. There's introductory text like welcome. Again, too long getting to the point. Your visitor leaves. There's not enough connective text. I don't get the point of why I should be there or why I should stay. There's no immediate images. Or there's too many images, and I can't figure out how to pick and settle on one. There's no way to return to the home page. So I click on a page, and I land somewhere, and I can't get back. Or suddenly a page has no menu bar. So one of the things you might want to think about is hiring somebody who can coach you in these kind of details, and not all web designers know how to do this. Give them what they came for, and don't get in their ways. Okay, here again, this is in your handout. You do not need to take notes. There are 8 things you have to do to set up a website. Decide your reasons, register a name for your site. I, again, highly recommend you keep the branding simple unless you have a name that's so common somebody's already taken it. Then you're going to need to come up with something to add on to. So artist, it's not such a great way to do it. Sculptor maybe, painter maybe, but then if that feels like it's limiting you, this can be a toughie. Ask for help. Get your friends in on it. Get your family in on it. Keep your name. 3, design the content first and the look will follow. Decide who will do what. You know, web pages need words, images, and links. And each one of those might take a different person to help you with it. Who will help you with the words, who will help you decide on the images, and who will help you create those links. Create a way to collect email addresses for future follow-up. This is your list. You have to have a way. If you wait for people to contact you and you put in, you know, here's my contact information, you are going to be sitting around for a long time. Like that artist who had 4,000 visitors a day, he had contact information. They didn't contact him. People don't bother. You have to give them a reason. You have to give them something they will want. They will walk away and they will give you their email address in return. Selecting a web host. Ask around. Get recommendations. Talk to other artists who are being hosted by a web host. This is important. Web host companies can come and go, and if they go, your website goes with them. They're the ones who take what you've designed and put it up on the World Wide Web and keep it on their servers, it's called. The next one, decide on what capabilities you want. Image enlargement, audio, video, shopping carts, credit card processing. There's companies who offer options for all of these things. It can boggle the mind. Again, go to people who are doing it successfully. Ask them what they're doing. Who does it for them? After it's over, decide who maintains your site. Have you got it situated so you can maintain it, as Steve spoke about yesterday? Fantastic. If not, you're going to have to find someone who does that. And the last is learn how to promote your site. Lots of free ways, and you've gotten lots of stuff from Joan and other people on this call, on these live calls. Mistake number 5, not understanding how to use your creativity. And make no mistake, you know, I know professionalism is important, and so you want, in some respects, a clean site. But again, it doesn't have to be dull. It can be playful. But you have to be careful. So the creativity must always be that which supports and keeps the focus on what you've decided you want your site to do. And here's where I'm going to talk just a bit more about that. This question comes up for artists all the time. Do I want to approach galleries to show my work, or do I want to sell my work myself? This is a tough question, and there are no easy answers, but I will give you some guidelines. The first one is to know this. Galleries are terrified. They are quaking in their shoes right now. They are losing business because websites have become such an easy venue for collectors to turn to the artists themselves. This is a good thing, and this is not a good thing. It's a good thing in that it gives the artist a larger range of options. It's not a good thing in that it takes down some of the allies that we artists need, our galleries and our dealers. For a lot of artists who have not tried to become their own gallery and dealer, as Alita went over yesterday, you will learn as you do this that you have expenses tied to this. You have some of the same expenses a gallery has. The only one you don't have, unless you have your own studio, is a brick-and-mortar shop. Those gallery owners pay taxes. They pay lighting. They pay utility. They pay their staff. They pay for advertising. They pay to promote events. They pay to hold events. It's all expensive. They can't survive without taking their 40% or 50% or 60%. So you have to kind of decide, do you really want galleries on your side? If so, you're going to have to be very careful about how you construct your website. If you already have galleries, I highly recommend that those galleries do not get buried on web pages back 5, 6, or 7 deep, and that they're not put as a menu link galleries, that they are right on your homepage. That you put an image of your work up that's in a gallery, and right under that image is the link to the gallery. Why? 2 reasons. One is you really become a partner with the gallery. Once you become a partner with the gallery, they work harder for you. When they know you're on their side, they work harder for you. That just makes sense. And 2, you are directing a collector to a place where then they can get a purchase. So you're not losing out on anything. You're winning on 2 fronts. If people want to come back to look more, you can encourage them to bookmark your site before they check the galleries out. So that is, I think, terribly important. The second thing I think is very important if you want to work with galleries is please, please, please do not call one of the sections of your site a gallery. Artists do this all the time. It drives me nuts. And it's one of the places where I differed with Steve White because he talked about the gallery section of your website. Think about it a minute. A, are you really a gallery? No, you're not. You're showing your work. And two, it steps on the toes of galleries, you know, and I think this is part one of the interesting pieces where language becomes very powerful, and you can see the power of words. So find another way to call that. Call it your artwork. Call it your portfolio. Call it anything, but don't call it gallery. So those are the two tips I have on that. If you do want to sell your work alongside a gallery, then talk with your galleries and ask them, what's the best way to do this? What will work for them? And set your website up so that it works for them and you both. Make it a win-win situation. So with your creativity, you know, you want to make sure that you have some way to show people. If it's just your art that you want to have be the creative focal point, then make sure those images are on the homepage in a way that is attractive and engaging and people want to click through for more. Here are a few tips that I want to tell you that you aren't going to get from anybody. You're not going to get them from I will almost guarantee every web designer I have asked this question does not know the answer. There are some tips that I learned in researching venues outside the artist community. I went to the marketing community. I went to the internet marketing community, and I learned some very interesting information. Here's the first one. The human eye, as soon as it lands on a computer screen, tracks in a very specific direction every single time. And here's how it tracks. It starts up in the upper left-hand corner and cuts at a diagonal across the top third of the page. And as it tracks this diagonal, it lands on three specific places. The first one is the top left-hand corner. And if you'll notice, that's often where a lot of websites put their domain name. If you go to my website, artist-statement.com, you'll see it's right up there in that corner. Why do you put it there? Because when people surf the web all the time, they're going in and out of websites. When they land on a page, they instinctively look there first, and when they can see that they are in the right place, then they stay. You've got them now for that first second. You've caught them, and they're going to stay there. If there's any confusion for them that they're not in the right place and they start looking around, you've completely lost those valuable 3 to 9 seconds that you have to keep them there. So they see they're in the right place. Now they can move down that diagonal. The next place the eye lands is just about in the middle of the page. And if you'll look at other websites that are especially around internet marketing, you'll see in the middle of the page something that journalists have known about for a long time. It's called a headline. And a headline, as journalists also call it, is a hook. You have to hook your audience with the headline. The hook has to be engaging. What engages the human brain? Questions always engage the human brain. A comment that is the reverse of what we're imagining. It's a cold, warm day here, you know, in Minnesota. Those kinds of things make the brain stop for a second and grab on. It makes the brain stay with you, so you've still got them in that 3 to 9 seconds. And then the next place the eye lands is right at the bottom of that diagonal on the right-hand side, just slightly in from the edge of the page. That's the last place they land. That's where you want to put whatever it is you want them to do next. That's the action spot of your website page. Do you want them to sign up for something you're offering them so you can get that incredible email address and start building your list? Do you want them to move to another place on the website so you engage them at a deeper level? Do you want them to pick up the phone and call you? Do you want them to place an order, which I actually wouldn't recommend because it's too early in the relationship? Remember, you're creating a relationship on this website, and the first page is the introduction. It's like the first 4 minutes. They've got to know they're in the right place, and they like you, they trust you, and now they want to hang around. So that's a really huge key. Some other tricks. Your choice of fonts. You want to make sure you have a font they call, fonts have sans serif and serif fonts, and it refers to, in graphic design world, at the bottom of each letter, there's either a little foot that grounds that letter, or there's no feet. Verdana, Arial are examples of fonts that are sans serif, sans meaning without serif, and Times New Roman and Palatino are examples of fonts that are serif. Now, serif fonts have those little feet on the bottom. When you print it out on a piece of paper, white paper, what it does is it helps the human eye ground the image to the paper. On a computer screen, it's a different story. It's harder for the human eye to grab information on a computer screen. So any extra doodads that you put up there for the human eye that has to fight with, you are tiring your visitor, you are losing them. So you want to make sure that you use fonts that are sans serif. You want to use only, at the most, two fonts, never more than two. And if you're smart, you'll pick one font because you can play around with changing one font by italics, by bold, if color works for you, by size, by how you spread out the, it's called kerning, how you spread the letters out more or less. But if you get too many fonts, again, you make the eye tired. It makes, overworks the eye. You want to keep your design simple. You don't want to confuse people like Molly talked about. Really important on the website. You want to make it clear why they're there and where you want them to go next or to do next. The next trick, there's a little trick called above the fold. And that simply means everything the human eye will see when it first clicks on your website before they have to scroll. This is very important that that diagonal hook happens for people before they have to scroll. Everything important has to be above the fold. All right, that's it for my mistakes for the websites, and I'm going to open up the line and take questions for a few minutes. So here we go. Okay, if everybody will hit star 6, who doesn't want to ask a question?
Can you hear me?
I'm going to wait till the star 16 is done. All right. Yes, I can hear you. Who is speaking?
Ariel?
Yes? Who is this?
This is Rena.
Rena, yes. Go right ahead.
Just a quick question on that last thing about before the scroll. Now there are so many different sizes of screens that people have out there. You know, can you speak to how you would deal with that?
Oh, you know, this is a perennial problem right now, is the inconsistency of computer monitors. It's the inconsistency of browsers. Your website, I had a heart attack when I went to a friend's house and looked at my website on Windows, and they'd also enlarged it because they were older people, and they had enlarged it, so when it came up, it was so gigantic I couldn't even read anything on it. It's very difficult. The best thing that you can do is to work with a web designer who knows how to work with different browsers and different options, but then test it and go to your friends' houses and look on their screen and see what's happening. There's no way to control it.
Okay.
You can just, you know, it's really, it is such an imperfect, and, the, you know, the this is one of the downsides in our culture of creating, you know, we have this thing about choice and having so many options, you know, and this is one of the downsides.
Okay, thanks.
I'm sorry. I wish I could give you, you know, a good answer to that one. There just ain't one. Okay. Thank you. If you can mute yourself back and then somebody else.
Ariane?
Yes.
Isaiah.
Who?
Yes, Ariane. This is Jan from Elkhart, Indiana.
Jan, okay, we've got you on quite an echo, so I'm going to try very hard to hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, is this better?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I didn't find your notes. Were they on that last email? Because I went in and checked again, and they were not on the bottom of it, along with the rest
of it. Oh, you're talking about the handouts?
Yes.
The handouts were sent out today separately. Or they may not be. Oh, I apologize. Maybe I missed. Gave my poor assistant the wrong directions. You'll get them today.
Oh, okay. Great.
That's why I was saying don't take notes. But I forgot. Yeah, they didn't go out with the group last night.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Are you on?
Yes.
Hi, it's Dana.
Hi, Dana.
Hi, I have a couple of questions. First of all, regarding the hook in the middle of the page, for us visual artists, can that be an engaging painting? I'm assuming it could be.
You really do want words.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean you can't have the painting, you know, right with the words so that the painting is, you know, there. But if you put the painting there without any words or any reference point for the visitor, it just won't translate quick enough in their brain.
Okay, so include words along with image.
Yes, and the words might be something as simple as, you know, for more landscapes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or to enlarge, click here, you know. But something so that people need direction on websites. I don't know if you've noticed, but we need to be directed when we get on a website. That's why it's so different from a portfolio or a brochure. And the direction is in layers as opposed to turning a page. You know, we all know how to turn the page. But the layers of the website mean that we have to be told where to go next because the options are there, all the options are sitting up there on the menu.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
Great.
The other really quick question I have, or maybe it's not so quick, but I've noticed, I think you mentioned, you sort of touched on it right now in your presentation, and it's been touched on before, I forget exactly by who, but I think it was Jeffrey Gorman, regarding the use of the job title, quote-unquote, of visual artist or sculptor. And I'm getting the sense that this is a bad thing to do, and I never knew this. It's on my business card. I mean, I am planning on getting some new business cards, like updated and so on, but I want to know, is this a bad thing to do?
Well, a business card was actually the one we were talking about. Gallery owners tend to... this is what I have heard, and now again, you know, we're dealing with, this is such a huge generality, but that there's a certain level of gallery owner that just finds it tacky, you know, I don't know where it came from or why, to put that you are an artist or a sculptor or a painter on your business card. On your website, I think that's a different story, but you don't have to say it. You can, indirectly, you can say it indirectly, you know, by your menu links, sculpture, you know, paintings, you know, and create the basket so it's pretty obvious right away that you. I think the key here is you don't need to say the obvious.
Okay.
But then again, sometimes you do.
Right. It took me so long to be able to finally call myself an artist. Now I want to say it all the time.
Well, you know what? Stand in front of your mirror every day and repeat it 10 times in the morning and 10 times before you go to bed.
Yeah. Thanks, Ariana.
Okay, yeah. If you can mute yourself back. Does anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Ariana.
This is Todd.
Todd?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
I wanted to throw out two other options. I'm a website designer as well as a fine artist. Two critical things that artists need to remember. One is optimize your images so that they load quickly. In this day of DSL, it's not as important as it used to be, but it still affects the way that your page loads and how quickly your images show up. And if you have a lot of images on one page, it can kill your website.
Thank you, Todd. That's excellent. Yes, of course.
And another one is to watch the width of the lines of text. Print designers know that the human eye optimally reads between 10 and 12 words a line. There are many websites I run into where the text runs the entire width of the screen and it's impossible to read.
And beyond.
You need to keep your... You need to put your text into some kind of a box or a frame, or not a frame, a table, in order to keep the width of the lines readable.
Absolutely. That's why breaking up your information often in bullets is really useful.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. That's fantastic. You and I should talk a little bit more later.
I would be happy to.
Great.
Ariane, this is Tracy from California. I was wondering,
Tracy, yes, go ahead.
You'd found any difference between designing a site on a Mac versus a PC?
Designing it? I'm not sure what do you mean, dear?
Can I throw something in?
Yes, go ahead, Todd.
I design my sites on a Mac, and I test them on a PC. That way that I know they will show up well on both platforms.
Okay. There you go.
But if you're going to choose between the two, design for PC. because Macs still only have between 3% and 6% of the population. Although in the art community, it's a larger percent.
Right, right.
But you're always better off designing for PC.
Design for the PC, then. Okay.
Ariane?
Yes,
it's Phyllis.
Yes, Phyllis.
I'm wondering how you see the sites that have been designed for by Fine Art Studio online, and whether you think, because hearing what you're saying, they don't quite fit your description of what you think are the best kind of layouts for a site. And since that's what I've gone with, and to have to try to figure out on my own how to do a much better job, it's like my heart sinks.
I hear you. And this is definitely one of the issues for artists that we at Smartist are really trying to pay attention to right now and hope seeing if we can come up with a better solution. But a lot of what I call them boutique websites where they give artists space initially, you're kind of stuck with the templates that they have come up with.
Yes.
It's not a bad way to get your feet wet. Those templates often work to get you started and get you going. They don't often take the place of your own uniquely designed website, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, so you have to kind of decide in terms of your career path, you know, where you are, what's important to you, go back to what's the purpose behind your website. If you just want to have your name out there and get known for a while, then those boutique website templates are fine. If you're really going after some high-end fine art galleries, then you probably need to spend the time and money to get your own website really uniquely done and done well. If you are just wanting to put your work up so that, you know, your friends and family and a few local collectors have access to you, again, those other websites are going to work just great. If you want galleries, design for one way. If you want to just create sales and do the completely alternative route, you design a different way.
Okay.
I hope that answers. It's not an easy answer,
no.
Phyllis.
It's not.
It's not pain-free. Okay, thank you. All right, we're coming close to the end. Is there one more question I can take?
This is Shayla.
Hello. Yes. Go ahead.
I was wondering, on your website, in the bottom page on the lower right, it shows for if you want to sign up, you'll get my e-tips. How do you technically put that on your website so that people can sign up to be on your mailing list, for example?
Okay, this is another issue. This comes under, I think it was Stephen, one of the panels talked about a company called Constant Contact. This comes under what's called list management service or software. Constant Contact, listmailpro.com. They're different software companies out there who have created what's called list management programs. And you have to link up with them, because what will happen is you put the document available on your website as a PDF file, and when people go in to sign up for that, it's automatically downloaded. That all has to do with the web design and the capabilities that the web designer has put on your website. Some people have shopping carts that do it automatically, and then they load it up onto the shopping cart. So these are all the capability issues, and there are many options and many companies. You have to do your research.
And revising my thing, so it's kind of going slowly.
Excuse me?
That wasn't me.
Oh. It's not an easy answer. You have to do your research and look around, but they're called list management software companies.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. One more question, and then we're going to wrap up.
Betsy?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I was on the domain names. I have a very difficult last name. Would I still use that?
Say it for us.
Betsy Lee Ryskowski.
Absolutely. I think. What is the work that you do, Betsy?
I'm a portrait artist.
Yes, because you are your brand, honey. So you've got to stick with your name.
But people can't spell it generally, ever.
Well, keep in mind that what happens with this kind of formatting is it's the things are done by email, so you create links that people click on automatically, and then they don't have to spell it. You know, you put it in such a way that when they, you know how to put a link in an email with the http://, I told you about, it becomes an automatic link, and they don't have to figure out how to spell it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, unless there's a really burning question, is there? Great, okay. So I'm going to mute us again, and we're going to wrap up. Hold on.
Can I ask a real shorty?
So So we are at the end of Smartest Telesummit 2007, Day 6. Look for more handouts tomorrow for the sessions. Allison's handout will be coming after her presentation. Again, if you have feedback, don't hesitate to let us know what is working and what isn't. So far, your help has been incredible. The testimonial line is open, 1-800-871-9012, extension 19591, pound, or email us at info@smartest-telesummit.com. See everyone tomorrow, the last day of the first ever online art career Smartest, where we are determined that you flourish, that your artwork flourishes, and you get to taste the deep satisfaction of fulfillment. Same time, same place.